From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. This is your host, Mr. Hunter Dusing from Dallas, Texas. Joining me in Colorado is Mr. John Gray. Say hello, John.
Hello, fellow metalheads.
Yeah, we're hanging out, actually. We're not in Colorado or Dallas. We're hanging out in the heavy metal parking lot, you guys. We're hanging out with Zebra Boy and Sam Dunn. And we're drinking beer, talking about how punk rock sucks and how Madonna belongs on fucking Mars, man. And joining me in this heavy metal parking lot, he's got his VB cracked open. He's leaning on his Holden, Mr. Stuart Balk. Say hello, Stuart.
Send that fucking to Mars, man.
Madonna belongs on fucking Mars, man.
Yeah, boy. Have you ever seen the sequel to that heavy metal parking lot?
No.
It's on Hulu, actually, where they actually trace or track down some of the guys from that show, from that documentary, and they caught up with Zebra Boy.
Oh.
And he goes, I forgot all about it. I didn't even know I was on it. I forgot all about it.
So, did they ask him what he did with his outfit?
No, he doesn't know. So
that is a goofy-ass outfit.
And now he's like, if you look at him, he's just like a businessman with a shirt and ties. Like,
he looks
nothing like it.
Gave up his rock and roll dreams and joined the corporate workforce, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you haven't seen Heavy Metal Parking Lot, do yourself a favor and look that up. Classic, like mini documentary.
This like 18 minutes. 18,
yeah, it seems like something you would find on VHS at a garage sale for a penny.
Dave Grohl did say that on the Nirvana bus back in the day. That was like on a repeated loop. That video, Heavy Metal Parking Lot. It was just like played over and over and over and over.
Maybe that's why Kurt Cobain killed himself.
Maybe, yeah.
Just got tired of it. He thought it was the only movie out there.
Well, that was like when they were talking about Vinnie Vincent on a Kiss podcast I was listening to. They were talking about how he did a convention for like 10 hours. And he demanded, because he was the headline attraction at the convention, that they play his mini EP over and over. And like, it ran for 20 minutes. So they reckon people were just sitting there and they heard it like about 40 times throughout the course of the day. And they were just sick of it. So
it's one of those ways you can drive people insane. It's like the day when I worked at the record store, we found a maxi, we found a single of Seal's Crazy. Oh. And it was Crazy by Seal and a bunch of remixes. Mm. And so we convinced all the other employees to make Seal's Crazy their pick. So it would be on repeat. And it was just funny to watch people's faces in the store as like they're like, this is an ending.
Yeah, you can tell because they're looking up at the staff going, what's going on? When's this going to change?
What's going on? But I would go up to the next person. I'd be like, listen, Seal's Crazy, single's on. I know you're probably sick of it, but you have to pick it as your thing. We just have to keep this thing going, you know?
There's no one, is that the store that's shut down out of business in the end?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, no shit, right.
But
I'm surprised someone didn't spray paint a thing across the front door and saying, that's for Seal, fuck you.
Yeah.
Karma bitches.
By the way, speaking of Vinnie Vincent, does anybody know where he is? Because isn't he like homeless and crazy now?
I think that was a story that he was gone nuts.
I've heard a few things. Oh, he's gone nuts. That's no rumor. He's literally gone fucking nuts.
Yeah.
What's happened though, I don't know.
I heard his house, like people went to the house like he moved out of, and it was just like, you know,
there was trash everywhere. It was like a squatters had lived there basically. And there was dead dogs in his freezer. They caught him on that. And,
oh, that's right.
Yeah. And his excuse was, well, I'm an animal activist. So I was just preserving their bodies. Like, no, you don't cryogenically freeze a dead dog. It just,
No.
You know, it's not Walt Disney, so just let it go, you know. But I don't know. I'm done with Kiss and their, especially some I've fans of fucking heard. Oh my fucking
heard, I've heard that one before.
Anyway, there was a Kiss group I'm a part of, and someone just put a post up for about the 1 billionth time. Oh, what's your favorite live Kiss album? I put Kiss Alive. Kiss Alive 2 is a pile of shit. Don't like it. And this guy went fucking apeshit. He's going, like, really? You know when someone's being sarcastic and they're joking? This guy was serious, like, oh, Stewie. And, of course, he spelled my name wrong. He spelled it S-T-E-W, so he didn't even bother looking.
Oh, motherfucker.
He didn't bother looking there. He was in some sort of Kiss haze, and then he goes, I think you're a pile of shit. What do you think about that, huh? And I'm, what?
Okay.
And I just said something like, oh, it's my opinion. Calm the fuck down, you moron, or something like that. And then he writes back again like a day later going, oh, you're a pile of shit. Okay, so he goes, you're a douchebag. I said, man, you're getting wound up over a fucking live album. I said, you're a dickhead or something. I'm just like, what the fuck is wrong with these people? Honestly, how? It's like me saying, I don't like Napalm Death. We were talking before the show, me and Hunter, and it's not like he's going, well, you're a fucking idiot, man. You don't like Napalm Death.
If somebody says they don't like Napalm Death, I go, of course you don't.
That's it. Just do it.
Yeah.
But some of these Kiss fans are just insane. Like clinically insane. And I'm like, what is wrong with you? You don't like something? They're the same ones as well. And I won't harp on about Kiss too long. But they're the same ones as well who go into a group and deliberately put pictures up of Tommy Thayer and Eric Singer going, oh, what's wrong with this picture? It's like, oh, God, here we go. And then you see, like, in the space of 10 minutes, there's, like, 150 comments. Oh, no.
Hey, I don't think they should be impersonating those characters.
Oh, don't even. I'm taking a break from that clown for a while.
Those characters played by Peter and Ace.
Ace is a good friend of mine. I went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I was the only guest. It's like, oh, get it.
Peter Chris, dear friend.
Did you hear the episode you did with Uli John Roth? Oh, the Tokyo Tapes. I'm a big fan of the Tokyo Tapes. All right, we get it. You like the Tokyo Tapes, whatever. I mean, shit a brick, you know?
Can't we have a moment for Brian Johnson?
Oh, my God. I nearly fucking smashed the car on it. I was like, shut up. I actually yelled, shut up. You know, it's not like your man's dead. All right, he's not dead. All right,
just we don't even know what's going on. I don't think people even like care at this point because AC/DC's just so played out. You know,
I figured out what the problem is with AC/DC. Angus Young, all right, he's Brian Johnson has to depart for health reasons. I got it. All right, but now he's thinking about getting Axl Rose in.
Oh, yeah, I know. Fuck that.
But
no,
I found out that Angus Young is a South Sydney supporter. It's like, well, that explains everything.
That's it.
Yeah. Explains
the fandom. Yeah. The fandom's over. That's it. It's done.
It's like I took my AC/DC albums and I burnt them all.
the only thing for people who don't understand, Stuart's a big Melbourne fan, and people from Melbourne fucking hate Sydney. And this to Stuart, this is like Russell Crowe replacing Brian Johnson, you know. Like,
I don't hate people from Sydney. Let me say that it's the fact that when you go to Sydney and you say you're from Melbourne, everything just changes. Like their demeanor and their attitude toward you changes. It's like, and I've experienced that a number of times, and you know that's so 80s. Get over it. Just deal with it. We're all Australians in the end, you know. You fuck tides. Just deal with it. Really. Oh boy, but yeah, man.
So what are we talking about today, Stu? I had no idea what the hell this thing was when you sent it to me.
You'd never heard of it?
No.
Oh wow,
never. I was like, what are we? What am I? Is this like Decline of Western Civilization Part 2? What is this?
Well,
like,
this is gonna be John. This is gonna be very interesting to see. Get Hunter's take on this because John and I had seen it. I'd seen it on VHS back in 1989 when it came out.
So let me just, from what I gleaned, was this okay? So what we're looking at is Hard and Heavy, which is a, and this is just what I gleaned from it because I was trying to look stuff up about it and didn't find a whole lot, but it's a VHS like video magazine.
Yep.
Yes.
A heavy metal like rock and roll video magazine.
This was an attempted format in the 80s. Playboy magazine tried it, where it was a Playboy magazine VHS. Where
I've got one of those still. Those tapes.
Yeah, it's like a video version of the magazine, where you have the interview, and then you have like the stuff that's like the feature article, and then you have the centerfold video. Later on, they just did them with just the centerfold videos, until anybody cared about. The producers of Night Flight tried some stuff like the Gorgon video magazine, which was like horror, like a Fangoria video magazine type of thing. There was also a alternative culture one, and I forget what the title was, but it was directed, I think, by Alex Winter, of all people. And Hard and Heavy was probably the most successful version. They basically took the heavy metal magazine, which, by the way, back in the late 80s, this stuff was in its prime, like Riff and Circus and Hit Parader were just all over the grocery stores.
Yep.
You'd find them at any newsstand. They were selling like crazy because the height of Motley Crue and Guns N' Roses and all that stuff.
And let us say as well, there was no Hard and Heavy magazine per se either.
Right. Right. This was, I think it aired on television in Europe because I noticed during the interviews they seemed to imply it's on European TV. And when I was Googling info for like some background on it, some message boards, the European posters implied it played on television there. And so, but in America, it was a VHS magazine.
Yeah.
And it was successful because I remember them coming out consistently. There were a lot of them, and it seems like I was watching one every month. And they were about $14 retail when they would come out.
Yeah, see, they were twice as much here. They were like $29.99. They were
not cheap. Yeah, they were like even $14.99 was expensive back then. That was like the cost of a CD, which was overpriced as well. So they were not. They might have been $16.99, depending on where you were. If you're Tower Records, they might have been $19.99. But it was a VHS magazine, and it has like later. It wasn't so much of it in this one, but later editions had like these kind of R-rated cartoons that were sort of like a prototype forerunner of Beavis and Butthead type of humor with heavy metal listeners beating up old ladies and parents and preachers and whatever.
Yeah, I noticed it. We had like the intro to this one we watched reminded me of like the Twisted Sister "We're Not Gonna Take It" video with like the parents, or like the Megadeth "Peace Sells" video or whatever.
Right,
where it's like,
because every metalhead's parents are like Leave It to Beaver parents.
Oh, I know, and they're like, "Now take your feet off the table.
Yeah.
What do you want to do when you grow up?" You know, and it's like, God, whose parents are like this? You know, what are they?
Well, what's funny is now hipsters worship that sort of Mad Men era of grown-up.
How it's come around.
Yeah, and now it's like, you know, back then it was like just the worst possible thing. It's the oppressive Reagan 80s, man.
Yeah,
you know, whatever.
Hey, Ronald Reagan saved punk, man.
You know, most people who are listening to heavy metal music, their parents were likely hippies, or were likely from that era.
Because
so.
They let them grow their hair out.
Exactly.
No, he's totally right. Like, my dad was a hippie, and fucking, he's the one who turned me on to all this stuff when I was a kid. So,
right.
Like, because there's no way in hell I would have been allowed to grow my hair out. You know,
right?
You just, your parents nip that shit in the bud. That were like, they'd be like, "Nope, not happening." Next, you know.
Yeah, but yeah. So they were a VHS tape, as John said, and they were very popular as well. I remember, I think I watched the first four. I'm like, I can't at 18. I can't keep up on these things. They're just too.
So how many
expensive.
Did they make?
18.
It's 18 volumes.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I think all of them are viewable on Hulu. Which was I was shocked to discover that.
Yeah, I saw you posting about that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I did not know that. I mean, if that is the case, I am going to have one busy as fuck week on my days off, just like catching up on all the Hard and Heavies. But yeah, this is something we've been threatening for a while as well, isn't it, John? Like, you know, do that Hard and Heavy episode.
Yeah.
So don't say you weren't warned. Like, why the hell are they covering this shit? Why aren't you covering the new Batman Superman film, man? Well, we've been threatening this for a long time, and. Because we were going to do something else, like, I can't remember, they call me Bruce or something, it's like, John goes, "Oh, let's do the Hard and Heavy." He's like, "Ah, perfect." That'd be quite nice. And we were going to do it last week without Hunter because he was tied up with other stuff, but we were like, nah. Easter, we were
Easter
too busy.
Take a week off.
Yeah. Take the week off for Easter and we'll get Hunter back in there because he'll be like, well, you talk a metal for 2 hours or hour and a half and why the fuck did you include me? So, yeah, let's get in it, man. Because like I said to you guys, I took notes. I've got this thing detailed over 3 fucking pages, like literally. So video starts out with a typical teenage 80s metal kid named Craig sitting on his chair and he's got, you know, beer hidden in his pot plant. His parents are like, now we're going out, Craig. And it's like, you'll be all right now. He goes,
have
oh,
you
I'll
done your homework?
Yeah. Like I got to ask a question. What's Charlie Brown's?
Charlie Brown's?
Yeah, because their parents say as they're leaving, where do you want to go? Oh, we'll go to Charlie Brown's.
Oh, I have no idea.
No such thing?
I have no
maybe
idea.
It was, yeah, maybe it was fictitious. Something in L.A. back in the 80s or something. I don't know. It
might have been some square restaurant like the Brown Derby or something.
Could oh, hmm. Interesting.
I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah, maybe nickname they had for it, but whatever. Yeah, I just didn't know if it was a chain over there or something.
Not as far as I know.
All right.
Yeah.
Then, so the kid pops in the tape, like the parents go, the kid grabs his beer out of the pot plant and pops in the hard and heavy tape. It's well, while that was a good opening, the opening of number 2 is much better when we cover number 2 later on down the track. If, yeah, when you guys see this, I pissed myself laughing when I first saw that one. Anyway, that leads into classic tracks, which is Bruce Dickinson talking about the Can I Play With Madness video.
Can I play with madness?
Did you guys ever know that Graham Chapman was in that video?
No.
Okay. Had you ever seen the video before?
I have.
Oh, you didn't pick it was him. Okay.
No, I don't know. I didn't think about it. And he, I think he said it was directed by one of Terry Gilliam's effects guys, which I did not know.
Yeah. So we get that with Dickinson talking about that. Then that leads into an interviews, and it's got an animation of a guy having his head being beaten in. And my question is, why have that except for shock value?
Yeah, you know, violence.
Yeah, metal, man. Metal and violence.
Metal is heavy and violent.
Yeah. And now this, I said in my notes here, Hunter would like this bit, Anthrax being interviewed in their heyday.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a big Anthrax fan. Saw them a few weeks ago, and it was awesome. Yeah. I thought the interview was kind of,
it was pretty,
I don't know.
It was like, they really was like, let's get this over with.
Just didn't seem like they wanted to be there, and they were kind of bitching a little bit, and, you know. Yeah. You know, Scott Ian was complaining about some magazines and stuff, but they played some clips from the Antisocial video, which is, you know, just watch that instead.
We're from New York. We hate everybody.
they're just acting like dickhead New Yorkers, you know.
Yeah. God, he had my
Scott notes. Scott Ian's fucking caterpillar eyebrows are disturbing.
Yeah, they really are. his beard and his everything. And he's got, Scott Ian used to work at Toys R Us, which is... would have scared some kids away going in there and seeing Scott Ian working at Toys R Us. Some kid going there, have you got any Master Universe figures? Not. Yeah. So we go from that into an interview with Voivod.
Yeah, which that was out of left field. I did not expect to see Voivod.
Yeah.
In the video. That could, you know, go from... you know, some thrash, some new wave of British heavy metal to Prague space metal. You know?
Oh, I've got here the Richard Stanleys of metal. I called them
Richard Stanleys.
Yeah, but
they're French Canadian, rednecks basically. But
and this was done at the time of the Dimension Hatros just being released, which is probably my favorite Voivod album.
That's a great record. Yeah. And they just put out a new EP, Post Society.
Who's still in... I know Piggy's died years ago.
Yeah, Piggy's dead. I think Blackie left the band again. So you have Snake, you have Away, who's basically the only constant member at this point.
Yeah.
And they got this dude named... whose nickname is Chewy on guitar. and he's actually pretty good. Like, he's kind of a sort of spacey player. Like Piggy,
really,
and he kind of plays more in the like Nothing Face, Dimension Hatros, you know, that style of Voivod, like sort of the more out there stuff, not the sort of stuff Voivod was doing later with Jason Newsted, you know?
Yeah.
Like when Piggy died. And then you have a guy named Rocky, Dominique LaRoche, Rocky on bass. I don't know who he is, but yeah, they're about to come go on tour in the U.S., and so I'm going to try to catch them this time around.
Very good.
Right. I'd be curious to know, John, are you much of a Voivod fan or no? I wouldn't.
This is the only time I've ever listened to him is watching this.
I was going to say, I can't imagine John listening to Voivod.
Well, like, really. it's one of those things where I think they might appeal to the Hawkwind fan in John a little bit.
Mm, true.
But some of their stuff.
Strangely enough, from what I recall, Hawkwind was never interviewed or profiled on Hard and Heavy. Just joked about by Lemmy.
Yeah.
So we'll get to it later.
I'll recommend stealing it. We'll get there.
Yeah, definitely.
But that was a kind of a pleasant surprise to see Voivod. I mean, the interview didn't do anything for me, but it's always cool to see footage of them and stuff.
Sure.
Well, the funny thing I noticed about like late 80s metal was it was a kind of weird mixture of these different subgenres, because I remember King Crimson being really big with metalheads back then, which I think I brought this up on the show.
And like King Crimson toured with Tool at one point.
Yeah.
I can see that. I can truly see that.
And they did, because King Crimson's last studio record, Power to Believe, is a pretty dark metal prog album. That's a dark, heavy album, you know?
I never quite got over the record my dad had of In the Court of the Crimson King.
Yeah, scaring the shit out of you.
Scaring the daylights out of me, that gatefold picture inside. Is like, what is this shit, really?
Yeah.
Even though I dug the first two tracks, especially the second one, I Talk to the Wind. It's like you get stoned just listening to it. You don't need
Greg Lake's voice has that effect on.
Yeah. Good album, though.
Yeah.
All right, now we get to the most ridiculous part of the whole video, the Party Ninjas.
The Party Ninjas.
Yeah. I'd never heard of this in my life.
I thought this was one of those segments that I thought was embarrassing.
Yeah, I've got in my notes, this is embarrassing. And I've also written, do they really care about missing children? Which I don't think they fucking do.
Although I thought it was kind of funny when the guy from Wasp said, find the headless children. <Jesus Christ. laughs> But, I mean, it was one of those things where it's one of those segments that just sets... I don't think it's their intention, but it sets up rock stars to sound like idiots because they always go, we like doing beneficials.
This exists nothing but to be a fucking cocaine binge party. It's all it is. Dummy, wrapped up as a, let's care about missing children shit, which is, this is ridiculous. I got here, Jimmy Bain looks bored. Blackie Lawless. Jimmy Bain's probably drunk though as well. It's got the chick from Friend Batal. It's got some autograph in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Just.
What's his name? Vince Neil.
Oh God, Vince Neil. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, charity and rock. It's a godsend. It's like, okay, who wants to listen to this shit? Like, it's
it's
almost like they just were able to get interview footage with those guys because they went to that event with their cameras. And just had to use it just to say they had a Vince Neil interview.
Yeah, pretty much. He's like,
I have no idea what the hell Party Ninjas were ever able to do for missing kids. I have, what on earth are they doing?
I never met a kid who was like, hey, I went missing one time, but these people.
Party Ninjas.
Party Ninjas.
Party Ninjas. You never hear about the missing kid rescued by the Party Ninjas, ever.
Yeah.
that should be the name of the episode. Did the Party Ninjas ever rescue a kid?
Or did they just party with cocaine with other people's money?
I think the latter is more the case, for sure.
And the more you read about most charities, the more you realize most of them are just a big scam.
Oh, God, I've said for years, those Let's Snort Coke for Africa things are just the biggest scam. Those, Hearing Aid and fucking, what was the other two? We Are the World.
Oh, Live Aid.
Band-Aid was just a drug fest from what I've read. It was just like, let's just lay down this track, but let's get our head over a fucking mirror as well. It was just crazy.
Was it, the metal one was Hearing Aid, wasn't it?
Hearing Aid, yeah.
The metal one. And what was it, but, recently there was a news story about the just irresponsible spending at Wounded Warriors, which is a very popular...
Which I've talked about for years, and people have tried to get in my get in my face about that shit. And I'm just like, no, they're scumbags.
I actually, it's very, very ironic that you bring it up, because, like I said, going back to my KISS podcast, there's a guy in there who's on, like, every month who is associated with that Wounded Warriors, and he did bring up about the fact that they got audited, or someone was questioning where the money went, but he was pretty steadfast that, you know, all the money does go to the, you know, the Wounded Warriors thing. So, yeah, I just funny you brought that up, that's all. Because I've heard about it through that.
Well, the auditing was like something like only 10% of it does, or 5% of it.
Yeah, like they spend a shitload of money on dumb crap, like these, you know, lavish events and, you know, like expensive getaways for the people who work there.
I heard the people who work there were sort of, you know, living it up a bit. You know, they were doing quite well out of it. So, yeah. So Party Ninjas are ridiculous. Absolutely, probably the most embarrassing thing on the video, and for something like this, that's saying something. All right, onto my notes. Let's move on further. Oh, next up we get Lemmy and his trick or treat section with
this is one of the funniest goddamn things.
Really, I thought it was okay. I mean,
I thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah, Lemmy pulls out the Hawk window.
He didn't bring up Little Richard, so I was happy about that.
Yeah.
Or the Beatles.
You're the Beatles. The Beatles in mono. It's the only way to hear them, really.
Yeah.
So basically pulls out one. What did John, did you recognize what the Hawkwind album was?
Did he pull it out? I think it was a, it looked like an alternate cover or gimmick cover for like the third album or something.
Okay.
It's so psychedelic.
Yeah. And also we get to see bits of Eat the Rich video in there. The Messerschmitt model airplane, was it? Or airplane.
Go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say about the flavored condoms.
Condoms. I love the way British people say condoms. They say condoms.
Yes, that's all right.
And what was it? I also enjoyed him talking about Michael Moorcock.
Very unfortunate name.
You get nervous when you go up on the stage, so you just kind of like, oh, but people thought it was pretty cosmic.
Oh, boy. And, of course, Lemmy finishes with the last thing he pulls out of the bag, which is a, surprise, surprise, bottle of Jack Daniels.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
His favorite.
Okay, that leads into...
The lamest whiskey to praise. And yes,
yeah, it really, it's like saying your favorite drink is Coca-Cola. It's like,
I prefer Canadian Club, actually, as a whiskey, far more than Jack Daniels.
Four Roses is a better bourbon than Jack Daniels.
That's right.
Yeah. Four Roses. There's quite a few, very many, very, very, very many that are superior at about the same price.
Then we get, that leads into Ozzy filming his Miracle Man video. Kind of a waste of time, really. Just didn't really add nothing to the fact of just having Ozzy in there.
Yeah, and Ozzy's fucking hair, man, from the 80s is unforgivably bad.
Yeah. The only
result. There's a lot of that hair. There's a lot of
that. I know. Yeah. I know, but Ozzy in particular, like, he looked like an old British dyke.
Yeah, he looked like he shouldn't be looking. He looked like Sharon does now, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he did. Like he always looked like his hair. He always looked like a really ugly woman in the 80s.
He does.
I hate his solo stuff. So this stuff's always painful.
Yeah, I was thinking about that when I was watching this. I was thinking about how I really don't give a shit about anything Ozzy's done outside of Black Sabbath.
Nah, it's worthless. Yeah. It's absolutely.
I like the Ultimate Sin album. I think it's a lot of fun.
I mean, there's a few songs here and there that I think are all right, but like I was like, I never got into Zakk Wylde. I never, after like the first couple albums, I was like, yeah, this had some good songs, but I don't know, just I don't think Ozzy, and you know, I saw this one interview because I was looking at other Hard and Heavy clips with Ozzy on them.
Yeah,
like I was going through some YouTube clips. There's this one where he's talking about, oh, you know, I couldn't express anything outside, musically outside of Sabbath, and that's where the first two records came from. I was like, no, it fucking didn't. Bob Daisley wrote those songs, and Randy Rhoads wrote those songs, and you just fucking got lucky because you got talented people around you.
And Jakey Lee as well. He wrote a shitload of the songs. But
Jakey Lee, yeah, he wrote a lot of his stuff. You know, he always Sharon always took care of him with good talent and gave him the credit for it, and so he got all the royalties.
That's right.
But anyway, but I was just thinking about that, how, like, don't care about Ozzy outside of Sabbath. Just
no. Okay, that leads into next, just a small piece of Blackie Lawless with some doll. And he goes, it's lewd, crude and rude, it's hard and heavy, and the doll's got a dick that pops out. Yeah, okay, great, Blackie. It's lovely. Thanks. Yeah.
Thank you.
That leads into a ridiculous black and blue video. I don't even know what the song's called. It's just stupid. Obviously,
yeah, I kind of tuned it out.
Yeah, it was like one of those ones, obviously, where they just, you know, they couldn't put it on MTV, man, so we'll just have show some uncensored version with the females with their tits hanging out, whatever.
Yeah. Why didn't MTV air it? I wonder why.
Yeah, I wonder why.
This band because we could show violence, but we can't show sex, man.
Yeah. Even though when they go to MTV and say, why was this video banned? Like, stupid, they go, well, number one, because the song sucks. Number two, because of the nudity. Okay, it leads into some interviews as well into a band called Violence. You ever heard of them before, Hunter?
Oh, no, there were a few little like thrash bands in there that I hadn't that I hadn't heard.
Well, I knew of Violence, obviously, when they first came out. I think that first album, Eternal Nightmare, was 87? And, featuring Rob Flynn from Machine Head in there, obviously his first band. He's in there, and because when Machine Head came out later on, I'm like, that's a dude from Violence. Oh, okay. Yeah, and one of the guys, I always wanted to be a brain surgeon, but I smoked too much pot. I think that was a singer who said that. That was about the only amusing thing in that interview. But it was cool to see some old Violence stuff. And then we get to see more Wasp. So more Blackie.
Embarrassing.
Embarrassing. Well, I put here, hey, look, it's Senator Blackie Lawless.
Oh, yeah. I want to be a senator one day. Shut the fuck up.
Is he for real? I mean...
By the way, like... What happened to Blackie? Because have you seen pictures of him lately? I mean, I know Stu has, and I know John probably has, because, you know, if you follow Stu on Facebook, you've seen pictures of Blackie lately.
Yeah, I had a profile picture of him being a fat ass. Yeah.
He looked like garbage when I saw him at the ChillerCon in 1996 without his Wasp gear. He just looked like this fat guy with a weird expression on his face.
But
somebody pointed out to me. That was Blackie Lawless. I went, really? Oh, God, it is. Yeah, he was bizarre looking.
I mean, he looks like fucking shit these... Like, he looks like a man wearing a Blackie Lawless mask.
Yeah.
Now.
Well, he was always older than he claimed to be. Like, he's been around forever. Like, he's in the last version of the New York Dolls in the 70s.
He was also in Stu's favorite movie.
Yeah, I was going to say this. I put my notes here. Why did he talk about his stellar performance in Can't Stop the Music? But Blackie going on about the fact that, he wanted to be a senator or something in 10 or 15 years. I can see that happening. Well, obviously not.
Well, he just put out a new Wasp record either this year or last year.
Mm.
And, like, the picture of him on the cover, it's like, it had to be from, like, the 80s. It's like, who is that?
It's photoshopped in bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, oh, God. Yeah. You know.
But I got here as well. He says, I got into rock and roll to get my dick sucked, but take me and my lyrics seriously, my social commentary, man. It's like, you're just a conundrum, black. It's fucking hopeless. Okay. So we get some more Blackie. Like, by this time, I'm just all burnt out on Blackie Law, so I just... didn't want to see him again after this, but...
Give me Chris Holmes in the pool any day, you know?
All right, then we get into a section, I think it's called New For You, and it's got the band Forbidden going through a dumpster looking for food, and...
because they're a poor band, we gotta find food.
Poor band, man! And, here we go, one of the lines here that somebody said, which made me laugh. We want to make the world conform to us. And I'm like, I've heard this a million times in interviews over the years.
Yeah.
Like in the magazines and all that sort of shit. But the only real sort of interesting part of this Forbidden part, I like the band Forbidden. I mean, that first album, Forbidden Evil, is fantastic.
I've heard of them. I've never listened to their stuff.
But the only sort of real oddity here is the fact it's got Paul Bostoff on drums before he went to Slayer, obviously.
Yeah, and he also played in Testament, too.
Oh, indeed, Testament, that's right.
And so did Dave Lombardo, played in Testament also.
Yeah, it's one big circle jerk of drummers, that is.
Yeah, they pass them around. Like Paul Bostaph, Dave Lombardo, like Gene Hoagland, all those old thrash drummers like have just made the rounds.
They're like groupies, really, just get passed around. You know, I'm done with this drummer. You can have him.
Yeah.
John, you got any thoughts on Forbidden? You ever heard of them before?
I had never heard of them. And it kind of just reminds me that there was always this emerging scene of these kind of, they were basically garage metal thrash bands or whatever that didn't wear costumes, didn't wear makeup, and you never saw them on MTV, I guess, unless you had Headbangers Ball maybe in the last hour.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they all have like weird cult followings like Possessed and stuff like that.
Right. And they had that like kind of weird like quarter page ads and Rip and, you know, their record companies would take out. It was like you kind of had to order the records from the company rather than just order it from your store, which took months.
Yeah.
Like anybody like whining about the days of Amazon and internet shopping, it's like, man, you don't know what it was like to order a record at a record store.
You had the right
waiting
to
fucking months.
Oh, God, yeah. Hey, add another few months if you lived overseas as well. Like, you know, right off the combat for a catalog, and yeah, you right off in January, it might turn up in September if you're lucky.
Right.
Yeah, this is ridiculous. So, yeah, I mean, people just don't know back then. I'm old! Back then, you had to fucking, you had to buy magazines. You had no choice. No internet. No, you were bound to the magazines like Metal Edge and Hit Parade. Hit Parade was more of a glamish, you know, they really put thrash stuff in there. Or Rip magazine or Burn. Yeah. If you Burn magazine, if you could afford the $60 price tag, it was like stupid prices because it was a Japanese magazine.
Oh.
It was the best looking magazine though. Burn was easily in terms of production and quality. But okay.
Real quick though, because you were talking about mail order. I was thinking about that the other day because I got the this double vinyl album of Watchtower's Demonstrations and Chaos, and Watchtower is one of those. They were like garage prog metal from Texas,
right?
Like their lead singer went on to become the lead singer in Dangerous Toys. Teasing, pleasing, but Watchtower is very different. But I was looking up like old reviews of. This compilation, Demonstrations in Chaos, and all the reviews I read were saying there's no way you'll find this in a store. You need to find get a mail order fill out form, or you have to find a really awesome specialty record shop. That's the only way you're going to get it. So it's like, wow. Oh, and I was thinking about the times, how they've changed. I can just go to Amazon and order it. You know,
send a stamp self-addressed envelope. We'll send you back a catalog
when we feel like it.
When
we recover from a hangover and find your letter.
Oh shit! This has been sitting in the bottom of the pile for a few months. Oh,
it was that bad. It was ridiculous.
It was really bad. Especially like the smaller the label, the smaller the label, the more diligent they were, I found. Some the bigger the label, they were just fucking useless.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's very true.
If you got a company like Megaforce, I don't know, I never ordered through Megaforce, but Eddie Trunk will tell you that he did a good job.
But, Eddie Trunk would have probably been mailing stuff to you.
Probably, yeah.
But like, you know, like
listen to the B side, because there's really good songs on there.
Yeah, he would leave notes on there. To be sure you listen to the deep cuts because the fans don't appreciate it. And then there's like Metal Blade was one of those small labels that
I think I wrote off to Metal Blade, or was it? God, I also was getting mixed up. There was Metal Blade and there was Roadrunner. I think I wrote off to Roadrunner actually.
And wouldn't it have been Road Racer as early as that? Because it was Road Racer.
There was Road Racer
first.
Records as well. I think a division of Metal Blade.
Yeah, there was also Megaforce.
Megaforce was the label that was started to promote Metallica, pretty much.
Yeah, and Anthrax and
Raven. King's X.
King's X, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, they were on Megaforce.
But yeah, that was
never mind, I forgot something else. But yeah, the first King's X record was a Megaforce release.
And the first Ace Frehley as well. Frehley's Comet.
That's right. Eddie Trunk signed them.
Yeah. I took Ace out for a pastrami sandwich and I signed him on the spot.
I took Johnny Z and I said, look, this is Ace Frehley. He's a good friend.
He's got some really good songs left in his brain.
Yeah. Kiss hasn't been the same since Ace left.
He hasn't completely pickled it with booze yet.
Yeah. Look, he's clean and sober. See? Look, oh, he'll, after today, he's clean and sober. He'll pick himself up. He'll be all right.
Let's ignore the fact Rick Derringer was pretty much playing all Ace's stuff, like, what, after the third album?
Yeah. They won't tell you that.
Bruce Kulick's brother, yeah, Bob. Bob Kulick played all the stuff on Kiss Alive 2 for the studio tracks.
True.
Yeah, except for
Rocket Ride or something.
Yeah. Yeah, Kiss Alive 2. Don't talk to me about that. I've just had enough bullshit from that this week. I don't need any more. Okay, moving on. We get to the next segment is Dio in his mansion.
Fuck yeah.
I got here, Dio's library is really impressive. However, his dungeon looks like a fat Marvel-loving fanboy should be living there. What a mess.
He's reading his book on chivalry.
Chivalry, yeah. I also put here, at least if Dio ever gets dementia, he'll never forget his name because his name is everywhere.
Well, Dio doesn't remember anything anymore because he's dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, I said, well, strangely enough, he actually, compared to like Blackie Lawless and Vince Neil, Dio actually comes off intelligent.
Oh, he did. He's very well learned, man. Yeah.
He's eloquent and well spoken and, you know, funny.
Yeah, he was always a good interview. You know.
Yeah, he's got a sense of humor about himself, and like he doesn't come off like a pompous ass like a lot of those guys do in this videotape.
The best Dio interview is still when he just constantly rips on Gene Simmons in Metal Headbanger's Journey.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
He's like,
tell you he invented this, and Gene will tell you he invented that. Yeah.
He goes, but Gene also invented shoes and breathing.
Got here as well. My notes, Dio is a curry head, which is pretty cool. My favorite food is curry. It's like, I didn't expect, I forgot about that. I thought he was going to say like a steak or something, or I don't know. Dio is his curry. Jimmy Bain road tested Dio's bar and gave it the thumbs up. And also put in my notes that his wife, Wendy Dio, looks like she came with the antique furniture.
Yep.
She's one old looking woman, I tell you.
Yeah.
Well, even back Dio's another guy older than he would claim.
Yeah.
Like, he goes back to, what, the late 50s or something?
Yeah, he was in, like, doo-wop groups.
He was in doo-wop groups in the late 50s, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he's an old man, so.
Yeah, Wendy Dio looks frightened. She doesn't even look the same today. She's had work done and all that, I think. Because she doesn't look like she does in this video anymore.
She's got that weird accent, like you don't know if she's American or she's British. I suggest that she was probably American and just lived in Britain for many, many years. That's what I'm guessing. I don't care anyway.
I know she worked with Deep Purple or something, and that's how she met Dio.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, moving on from Ronnie James Dio. Now we get Vince Neil on the set of Police Academy 6.
Cinema classic.
I got here, this is truly the apocalypse. Vince Neil and Police Academy 6. The director of Police Academy 6 looks like is telling us the secret of acting, which is a joke. And also Vince just giving details about the then new album that they'll be starting on, which was Dr. Feelgood, which, I'm old! My God. If he's talking about that, this starting work on that, that feels like a lifetime ago that thing came out. So, you got any thoughts, guys, on the Vince Neil and on the set of Police Academy 6? And he's, you can tell they really cared for him with that shitty trailer they gave him. It was like the size of a shoebox, literally.
It's Police Academy 6. I mean, they're kind of just, shitting it out. Like,
what amazed me, it made it obvious how padded the magazine was. Because it's obviously they hadn't got their editing technique down at the time. So it almost felt like something you'd get out of like a video pirates collection, you know, heavy metal clips or whatever. And it was just like, it was so random. It's like, I already saw him in the Party Ninjas video.
They tried to shoehorn as much Vince Neil and Ozzy and Blackie Lawless in there, you know. That was it. So, yeah, basically Vince Neil. Oh, he did see him hanging out with Bubba Smith, and Bubba Smith's probably thinking, who the fuck's this bitch, man? Is it a guy or a girl, man? I can't tell. Next. Oh, my favorite part of the whole video. I've got my notes here. Oh, my God, Mammoth. I forgot about this band. and the video is for the song Fat Man that they did. Did one album, and that was it. And then they did a couple of compilations with live stuff on there. I forgot all about this fucking band. I promise you, I'd forgotten all about them. I just...
Although I saw Fear Factory the other day, and I think their bass player might be in Fear Factory because he looks just like Tony Campos.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, like big bushy beard that just completely hides the lower part of your face.
But I thought the video was hysterical. Good song as well, by the way. The video is funny as all shit. And they introduced themselves by saying, "We're Mammoth and we want some food."
it's like a novelty group.
It is. Or even on the, wasn't their album sleeve, I think they put down the members' names and their weight. It's like, I've never heard of it.
I didn't know that.
I think it was on the album sleeve or it's somewhere. I think they got like John McCoy, 125 kilos. It's like, well, Jesus, all right. They're really, you know, sort of enhancing this fucking fact that these guys are fat. We got it. We got to look at them for a second and know they're fat. But yeah, I think this is probably my favorite. This is the part I rewound a few times and just watched Mammoth. I thought it was hysterical. So that was that. And actually, I'm gonna put up on the show notes the Mammoth video on YouTube. I think it's just too funny to pass up on.
Still definitely one of John's favorite bands.
Did you, big Mammoth fan, are you, John?
Nah, I was just I didn't like them back when I saw them. It's hard and heavy thing 25 years ago, or whatever the hell it was.
You never sought out their one and only studio album?
Well, that was a funny thing about Hard and Heavy, is I swear I probably disliked maybe 85% of the music on these videotapes, but I still watched every one.
I just need something to hate. What's it like? I saw a Hard and Heavy video.
I saw one on YouTube that had fucking Tin Machine on it. I was like, oh, really?
Boy. Yeah.
Doing Tin Machine?
Tin Machine got coverage in Rip and Metal magazines. It was a weird time. It was a really weird time.
I was like, I didn't know anybody gave a shit enough about Tin Machine to interview them.
Here's the really ridiculous thing is that, okay, there was Metal. So if you came out with a group like Tin Machine, okay, were you going to promote yourself with the Metal group or were you going to promote yourself with the pop of Milli Vanilli and George Michael? And I mean, it was literally, it was that divided. You know, like, if you had an electric guitar, if you had
to go with the rock crowd.
If you had heavy drumming, you were promoted as hard rock. And if anything else, it was soft pop shit. You know, it was
David Bowie going, "Oh, I'm tired of being David Bowie. I'm going to be in a band."
Right. It was like, you know, on one side you got Timmy T, One More Try. So I'm sure they thought Tin Machine was closer to Guns N' Roses than that.
I bet David Bowie wishes he was David Bowie now. okay, then we get a quick segment with Lita Ford looking hot back then compared to not now.
Yeah, I saw her and Eddie Ojeda on Chopped on the Food Network.
Oh God, I wanted to see that.
And they also had the guy who currently sings in Foreigner.
Oh, the Filipino guy? No, that's Journey.
It's whoever currently sings in the, you know, Foreigner cover band that is Foreigner.
Basically the band known as Foreigner, who doesn't have Lou Gramm, so I don't care about them, Foreigner.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Yeah. Oh, then we get this another new for you segment with a band called Warrant. Yes, that Warrant.
Yes.
Yes, with I put in here, don't mention his name, that man.
Oh, yeah, if you say his name, Stuart will have his mic glitches again.
Yeah, he really will, yeah. Or we'll get cut off like we did.
In fact, just talking about Warrant actually may cast a shadow on the show.
Yeah, but anyway, I put my notes here. Janie Lane is a fucking idiot.
yeah.
And then one of his quote here, "We're not into the hard alcohol," says the man who died of alcoholism, so...
Did he die of alcoholism?
He fucked his liver. I think that pretty much constitutes alcoholism, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't know how he died.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure it
was. Plus, he was a disaster last time I saw him interviewed on, like, VH1.
Oh, when he spoke about, "Oh, don't want to ever sing Cherry Pie again in my life.
That song's my curse." Yeah, I was like, "Cross-eyed bear on my back.
I wish I never wrote it.
Yet the Turtles can go on and sing Happy Together after 50 years and they have a problem with it, you know. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly.
Shut up crying, you fucking... Honestly, if you want to hear the best stories about Janie Lane, go to Metal Sludge and go through their archives. It's like some of the shit they had back there in like the early 2000s were just hysterical about Warren Giggs where he was falling off the stage and... like bumming cigarettes off people
and
in the audience
and,
as well.
And Warrant still exists. I found out that they're...
Oh, yeah. They didn't give a fucking
I saw they were touring with... they came in, like, they played the same venue that Quiet Riot was going to be playing. I was like, oh, my goodness.
Well,
it's the leftovers of the 80s coming through.
At least it's only one version of Warrant as opposed to four versions of Rat. It's like...
Oh, I know. Bobby Blotzer's Rat.
Juan Crouch's Rat. Juan Crossio's name, Rat, whatever.
Warren DeMartini. No, actually, I don't think he's
Juan. Yeah, Juan Crossio. Yeah.
Well, that's like some version of Faster Pussycat played down the street from me.
Some version of Faster Pussycat.
So it's something like there's two versions of them.
The problem is that sort of thing. It's a roll of the dice. Unless you fucking know who's in there, it's really, like Stephen Piercy's Rat. I wouldn't even do that. I mean, it's just like. Did you ever hear that interview we did, Hunter, on Eddie Trunk, the Stephen Piercy one?
Yeah, I did.
You know. I went fucking berserk. Just listened to it. I was like, you know. It must have been 150 you knows in a space of 40 minutes. Like, really? Can't you string together a sentence without saying you know?
Not a particularly memorable.
I heard it once. That was it. I will never listen to it again. I nearly tinkered with the fact if I had a lot of free time on my hands, which I don't. If I did, I was actually going to take it and cut out every you know just to make it a bit more fucking audible. But I was like, well, if any Trunk can't be bothered, why the fuck am I? Just like, nah. That's a bit, anyway, yeah. Next up, we finished with Warrant. And of course, Janie Lane, you know, pretending that he's being serious with some girl that the camera is just like, constitute what a fucking idiot he really is. Then we go over to a section of a band called the Choir Boys, who I've always called the Queer Boys because I fucking hated them. They were stupid. You got any thoughts on this band, John?
I think we were all calling them the Queer Boys back then.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so it wasn't just me.
Even back then, I did not get the whole makeup thing or any type of androgyny or why any of these guys did that.
I sat in the jacuzzi all day long and nobody had switched it on. I thought, fuck. I said, fuck you. Shut up.
Well, so baffling.
Just ridiculous. Oh, my goodness. And, okay, then we move on. This episode's going to run nearly as long as the whole fucking videotape. Legends on Film, just Alice Cooper. Not much, just Alice. You know.
Same old Alice Cooper routine.
Basically, yeah, exactly. It's you've seen like one Alice Cooper interview. You've seen them all. You know,
it's the same thing every time. I mean, I love him, but it's the same interview every time.
I know. Yeah, no disrespect to Alice, and if you ever get a chance, Super Duper Alice Cooper is a fun documentary.
Very, very good.
That Sam Dunn did. But Alice. He always kind of does the same. He has the same, and you know, he's a great performer. A lot of performers just they do one thing well, and that's it. But you know, seeing Alice Cooper. Isn't a selling point for an interview thing like
right.
this.
Right. It's not a David Lee Roth interview.
No.
What's going to happen?
It's like, what Charles Manson-esque rant are you going to get this time?
I wish this video finished with a Lee Roth interview. Would have been more enjoyable than the Alice one. I've got my notes here. What skeezer shows a tit at an Alice Cooper show? Just Motley Crue rat, yes, but not Alice Cooper. So, just odd. It's kind of like me going to a Joan Jett show my dick. You know, it's just pointless.
it should be a rotting tit.
like one, you know, like a festering one with you. Yeah. Oh boy. And basically, that's it. That's it. We get the end credits after that, featuring some hot as fuck women backstage at some show. I think it's like a Femme Fatale one or something. Just like a montage of this. Fucking slamming us 80s babes out there. And then we finish off with an animation of the Hard and Heavy Fist flipping us off. Like, very metal.
Good.
Very metal, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's it. 70 minutes. That's the runtime of this video, 70 minutes. That's basically a breakdown for you. You won't find this on YouTube, so forget it. We tried. But John said, if you got Hulu, they are possibly up there, right? You're definitely sure they're there, or just...
Yeah, there's at least like 10 or 10 to 18 episodes on Hulu.
Well, there you go. If you got Hulu, then seek out the Hard and Heavies and start with number one and work your way from there, because we will be covering number two sometime in the future. And
Yeah.
But what was your thoughts on this, Hannah, seeing this is the first time you'd ever seen this or even heard of it?
It's one of those things where I was like, oh, that's an interesting concept for the time, probably, but
yeah. It's
not, it didn't, like, the only, like, gem that I unearthed from it was that Lemmy bit I thought was pretty funny. You know, there was some decent live footage here and there, and, you know, there's some funny stuff like Mammoth. But you know, but a lot of the interviews were just cringeworthy. Like, I was like, God.
Well, I will give you a bit of a teaser for part two when we do it. There is very, very, very early footage of Gore on there.
Oh, that's exciting.
Long before the costumes and all that. So,
like, when they were
the first time I heard of them. Yeah,
me too. First time I heard of Gore was on part two of this. So yeah. I'm like,
exciting.
I'll get into that story when we get into it sometime down the future. But I want to ask you guys, I think I got a pretty clear idea what the answer is going to be. Could you do a video magazine today on DVD?
No, because it's not the way media, like DVD is a dying format. I went into Barnes & Noble and, you know, they've cut back the DVDs they hold by a lot. Best Buy is getting rid of them. I think Target's going to get rid of them because their DVD section when I go there is like a mess.
It's crap.
It doesn't look like they even bother to put it back together because they just don't care. But it's just, so doing something like that on DVD now, people do stuff like this on YouTube, you know.
Yeah.
People have their own little shows that they produce and you know, some are pretty fun, some are pretty lame, there are podcasts that do stuff like that, and
yeah,
you know, there are ways that the format adapts and changes.
Yeah, I guess it's of its time for sure. But I mean,
the style of music too. Music's not as territorial as it used to be.
That's true. I heard an interview with Isan from Emperor, and they were talking about like, how is it that you know, or working with this guy and that guy. And he's like, it's just heavy metal, man. Like, you know?
Yeah, true.
He was like, we all, you know, we all like the same shit. We all like Iron Maiden. We all like it. So, you know, yeah, this guy makes more mainstream stuff. I make my weird proggy shit and black metal. But it's all just heavy metal. Who cares, you know?
Yeah. Well, okay, let's go around and give a rating out of 10. Hunter, I want to hear your thoughts.
I mean, I'd give it like a 5. I was kind of like, you know, it was I always enjoy finding heavy metal relics that I don't know about.
Okay.
And so it was pretty cool, but you know, at the same time, and you know, it had a few gems in there, but it's not something I would seek out.
John?
Back then, I would have probably given it a 6. Nowadays, I give it like a 3. It's pretty worthless.
Okay, so Hannah,
I'll put it this way, not to be a dickhead, but it's just like, remember on the Van Halen show, I said that it was always a relief to hear a David Lee Roth interview because interviews with other metal singers, they were such dumbasses.
Yeah.
This is perfect evidence of that. It's just like, it's a Blackie Lawless interview is like worthless. There's nothing there.
And it's like, you know,
it's like an interview with a carrot, you know, it's just nothing there.
And, you know, having people like Voivod in there kind of ups it for a little bit. But again, Voivod, their first language isn't even English. So you're like, okay.
Right.
Well, okay, so.
It's a cultural curio, basically. That's all it is. Like what metal used to be. And all you latecomers who wonder why hair metal or metal was killed out by grunge, this is pretty good evidence why.
I will say this. This video probably came about 3 years too late or about 2 years too late.
Yes.
Really could have made a lot of money on these things and kept the series going. Had it came out in about 86, 87 when Poison was starting to break, you know, and the crew was huge with Girls, 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 but they left until 89, near on 1990, which is...
Yeah. I mean, they felt dated back when they came out. And you could see them catching up. Like, they started catching up. Like, I think they talked to Ice-T and Body Count, all that stuff, and they started trying to catch up, but it was like... But this first volume feels like... It's like footage that was sitting on the shelf for 3 years, and let's just do something.
You know what documentary made me go, oh... You know, that it's like, man, no wonder everybody couldn't wait for this to die was Decline of Western Civilization Part 2.
Oh, yeah.
Like, all those bands, just, they were the biggest fucking pigs.
That did hair metal, hard rock, no favors whatsoever.
No, I think that movie kind of was a nail in the coffin.
Chris Holmes of the Vodka Bottle was like, that's it. Fuck this whole subgenre. It's just
stupid. and just some of those bands like Odin or whatever the fuck, you know. Like, God, one of the guys in that band's an armored saint now, which I thought was funny.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. All right. So Hunter gave this 6, and
John, I gave it a 5.
Oh, you gave it a 5. Sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. 5. All right. Hunter gave
it a 5. It's a big difference. It's a big difference.
And John gave it a 3.
Yeah.
I'm just on Facebook here. Hang on. Sorry. Unfriend. John, unfriend. I'm giving this a fucking 10 out of 10, man.
So does it kind of has nostalgia value for you?
Oh, totally. Like Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park, it's all nostalgia. It's a cheese platter, but it's I love it, man. Like I was sitting on about an 8, and then Mammoth came on. Like it's fucking 10. I don't care what comes after this. Mammoth just kills it. It's the best. So it's a 10. And I'll do you one even better than that. I'm now going to undertake the crazy-ass task of trying to find all 18 volumes on VHS.
Oh, God.
I know I had numbers 1 and 2, and I was telling John before the show, I searched every freaking nook and cranny of my house for where I've got VHS. No, I couldn't find them. Couldn't find the tapes anywhere. So, I don't know. I think I may even give them to Rob. I said to Rob, I'll give him a shout out in this show. Thanks, Robbie, for getting these to me at the last second and sticking the DVD in your mailbox at 4 in the morning for me, man. I really owe you one. That's how I had to get this off Robbie. So, yeah, I said I'd give him a shout out in the show. But, yeah, I'm going to... Hey, if anybody out there's got the Heart and Heavies, you know, want them all, happily pay the freight from wherever you live to get them to me. just don't try and say, well, you know, shoot, they're worth $40. Like, no, they're not. It was more than what the budget was, really. Just like, this budget was done on cocaine strictly. There was no money involved. But yeah, give it a 10, man. That's it.
Right on.
I couldn't give it nothing less because I'm an idiot. What can I say? Just
very nice.
Metal loving, hard rock loving fool.
That's all. Yep.
And, yeah, I look forward to a store number 2. Can't say
yeah
I can wait, yeah. Yeah, but anyway, there we go. Hard and Heavy, we hope this is sort of tickled your interest a little bit, thinking, oh, what the hell is this crap they're talking about, you know. But yeah, video magazine, it's cool. Just fucking track down the first one for Mammoth. Or actually, no, just watch the Mammoth clip I'm going to put in the show notes, all right? That'll...
You know, and there's a lot of, like, little clips on YouTube that have the sort of gems, you know, like the Lemmy interview and stuff. I posted that on Facebook earlier.
It's interesting because I just remembered where the video magazine actually started. I think Michael Nesmith actually started video magazines.
Really?
I think he did in, like, 82, 83. He did, like, the first video magazine.
Didn't he do didn't he do one that came out in Laserdisc, like, Elephants or something?
Elephant Parts was... I think he did a subsequent video magazine concept, but, I mean, finding this stuff now is nearly impossible. But I know that Tim Lucas, the fanzine editor of Video Watchdog, did a Video Watchdog segment for Nesmith's video magazine. I think this was after Elephant Parts. So it's like, I just know that there was... that idea was always around. Like, people were trying to exploit what to do with videotape other than selling porn and movies. But yeah. I know that Nesmith actually probably came up with the video magazine idea. He's also the guy who came up with the concept of MTV, which is something he's not... probably doesn't really want credit for these
really?
days.
Well, he's a bit of a pioneer. I know his mother was the one who invented liquid paper as well.
Right. I'd always heard it was the aunt. Maybe it was his mom. But what happened was he came up with a show called Nick Rocks for Nickelodeon, which was just a half-hour music videos. And then he said, you know, I think he said, hey, do a channel that's just 24 hours of music videos. And they did, and boom. You know, now he's retired in Monterey, California, which is a beautiful place.
Oh, so is he? I guess
Yeah, he's doing fine.
He doesn't tour with the Monkees anymore?
No, he doesn't. He doesn't tour with them. He's on the new album that they're working on, but he's not touring with them. And he made that.
Yeah, it's one of those things where he's the one who doesn't have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's always been the holdout.
Yeah. I think that was the case back in the early 90s, wasn't it? When it was just the other three, he was like,
yeah, he was he's more financially comfortable than they are, so he's just like, yeah, fuck it, why? Right. You know.
Yeah, he also successfully sued PBS.
Really?
Yeah, his video company was releasing their stuff on video, and they were forcing him somehow by contract to put out more than they could really sell. So he sued them for some sort of breach of contract or pushy business practice on one and got a settlement.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a really it was an odd thing, but there's some interesting stuff I've read about Nesmith and his business, you know, methods and everything.
Nice. All right. Well, that's it for Hard and Heavy number one. There will be a number two sometime down the line. Not sure when. We've got something lined up that John and I were talking about before that we're going to lay on Hunter after we finish recording and see if we can organize that for next week's show. Anything else you want to bring up, by the way?
Just subscribe on iTunes, leave us a review, rate us. All that stuff helps. So if you want to support the show, that's a good way to do it.
Cool. Well, say goodnight, fellas.
Adios.
Mahalo.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.